I've been given the privilege of speaking before the fellowship for many years, decades. I've never had a topic so difficult, so challenging. I'm going to admit right up front, this is going to be a failure. This presentation is going to be a failure. All I ask is that you maybe pluck one item out of it and maybe run with it, because it's just waves. Now, some of you know I have a habit of going to people who cross my path just before the sermon, maybe days or weeks before the message, and I'll tell them what I'm speaking on. I ask these brethren, these saints, if they give me some tips on something they might want me to underscore. Most of those I approached on this wavelength, they said, "You're giving a sermon on lying, Brother Michael. That's a vast subject. I thought the previous sermon was rough, the one on the eighth commandment, stealing. I thought the one on adultery was rough. This one about lying, it's just the most difficult thing I've ever put together in my life. There's no way I'm going to contain the whole topic within the time allotted. It's likely I'm going to go off on one of many anecdotes I didn't put into the slides, because it's everywhere. It's just everywhere. I had resolved to put Psalm 17 toward the end of the presentation. And just when I flipped to Psalm 17, Javon's up here reading from it. Anybody you notice that? O Yahweh, who will dwell in thy tabernacle? He who speaks the truth in his heart. Because that's really what this is all about, speaking. Because once you speak the truth in your heart, the rest falls into line. Because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. I've called this topic the evil of fear, the subtitle, the evil of fear. Because pure evil emanates from fear. And once we get rid of our fears, evil goes away. And it is fear that is at the underpinning of the lies. See, here's an anecdote. It's not in the notes. What's the first lie in the Bible? Most people will say that it's the serpent that tells the woman, go ahead and eat that fruit. In dying, you will not die. Now, the enemy has a lot invested in that ancient lie. Think about it. It's a very ancient lie. He has so much invested. And this explains the vast fabric of supernatural phenomena, seances. I mean, there's an influential, high gospel-like church in Chicago. One of their main doctrines is talking to the dead. This whole nonsense of talking to the dead. Oh, you ain't going to die. Oh, yeah, you're going to be over there looking down on us and all that. You know, he has so much invested in that lie, he's going to continue investing in that lie. Many people say that that was the first lie. I think it came a little earlier when the woman said, she wasn't called Eve at the time, but our mother said, we can eat all the fruit in the garden, but this particular fruit we cannot eat, nor can we touch. And she added to the law when she said that. There was no commandment to not touch it. We're not sure where she got that from. Did she just make that up on the spot? How many of us have made up lies on the spot? Enhance things, embellish them. Or maybe her husband told her. Maybe he sat her down and said, listen, just don't touch it. Don't touch it, okay? Just don't touch it. As if putting a hedge around that commandment made absolutely sure she wouldn't break it. Well, I think that's the first lie, because it was adding to the law. The human race is just riddled with lies. Some of these outlines, you'll find some of these outlines I give in some of these sermons about the Ten Commandments. Look at that. I didn't even change the top. See, it says Eighth Commandment. It should say Ninth. The Ninth Commandment of Ten, topics covered. We're going to talk about the commandment itself, meaning of key words in the command, case studies, strategies going forward. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, Exodus 20:16. Because it starts with the words, thou shalt not, it is considered a negative command, a prohibition. The Hebrew construct, I never told you this before, but for the negative commands, I always begin with the word lo in Hebrew, lo. It means don't, no. How many of you have seen that T-shirt that goes, what part of no don't you understand? Okay, that's what lo is. It's a big no. Here's some of the key words. Strong's Hebrew 6030, anah. primitive root properly to eye, or generally to heed, that is to pay attention, by implication to respond, by extension to begin to speak, specifically to sing, shout, testify, announce. It's amazing, it is throughout scriptures, most often translated answer. But in this verse, it's translated bear. There's a key to understanding what's at play here. The word answer means a response, and response means responsibility. Well, I really commend that word responsibility to you as a key to understanding this command. Here's another Hebrew word, Strong's number 8267, shakir. It means an untruth, by implication a sham. Without cause, deceit. Well, if you understand Strong's, I'm going to give you a short course in understanding Strong entries. When you see the basic definition, it's followed by a colon. Then after the colon, he's showing you all the ways it's translated. All right, so that's how you use that. In this passage, it's translated false, as in false witness. Another word is aid. Hebrews, Strong number 5707. It's from number 5749. It's a contracted form, it appears. It means concretely a witness, a testimony. Now, here's an interlinear version of it. It's Hebrew, so it reads from right to the left. I kind of pasted it in there from my eSword. And there you see the Strong's numbers. If you ever want to play back this presentation on the video, I asked the control room to show the screen now, okay, if they're not showing it. But I'm going to give you a literal interpretation of this thing. Don't answer to your neighbor and answer fake. That's putting it in the exact order of the Hebrew itself. Lo, don't. Answer to your neighbor and answer fake. Okay. When I turn on the news, I'm making inquiry of the news station, the news broadcast. I'm asking. Their answer is the thing they are broadcasting. And this is where we get into the problem of fake news. Now I'm going to go off the notes for a moment. This whole fake news thing, it has several elements. One is where they just flat out report a lie. The next thing is where they distort the truth. They twist it. They might take odd aspects of it, blow them up, fill up the page with it, and leave off the rest. And then there's the things they fail to report. I would say there's just as much pain as what in what they fail to report and what they do report. They will never talk about the good things that Yahweh's people are doing. They're more interested in blowing up and filling up the page with evil, negative things. I complain about this anecdote often. Back in the 1990s, there was an afternoon report on NPR. Some poor guy did a rain dance on his hut in Africa. He had a drought. This poor guy, I don't know what deity he was dancing to, but he was struck by lightning. And they reported this on NPR, national broadcast. And I wonder, why did they do that? Why would they report that? They didn't even tell you his name. No, they were playing it for sport. And this is how these guys are. These faceless characters, they take the weird, the freaky, the oddball, they inflate it, put it on the front page, and there's your religion update. And that's what they think of us. They want everybody else to think that we're like dumb and ignorant. Don't answer to your neighbor and answer fake. When I make inquiry of the news, I'm looking for some facts. Sometimes I get fake news. Fake stories, partial stories, non-reporting of significant events. We have all been victims and sinners in this area. The basic command is augmented with other commands in the Torah. Here's a passage from Leviticus 19:11-13. You shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy Elohim, I am Yahweh. Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. Okay, again, this is not in the notes, another sideshow. Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor. One noted preacher from Chicago pointed out that one of the fundamental issues of immodesty in dress is that immodest dress, provocative dress, is a defrauding. Because everybody knows when a woman dresses in a provocative way, she's advertising herself. Come on, I'm available. And this preacher, I tend to like that language. He started using the language, clothing that defrauds. There's many kinds of frauds, all kinds of frauds. In the business world, in the commercial world, it's a real problem when someone submits a resume claiming skills that they don't have. And then they hire the guy, they invest in him, you know, all the whole thing, the benefits, all that stuff, the insurance. And they find out he really can't do what he said. It's a real problem. Well, let me talk about scripture twisters on the attack. Bible teachers of low character have attempted to narrowly frame this command as though it only applies to legal proceedings. This one-dimensional view places the ninth commandment in a singular position, suggesting that all of the Ten Commandments apply to broad sections of society, but this one applies only in the courtroom. Question, how many of you here have had to testify in a courtroom? I'm waiting. One, two, three, maybe. I see less than 10 hands go up in a room full of maybe 30, 40 people. So I'm trying to be accurate. I don't know. But it's a tiny fraction of us who will wind up testifying in a courtroom. But there are people who say, oh, that ninth commandment, oh, that's just going into a courtroom. But all the other commands apply to everybody broadly. And so you have this business of artificially narrow definitions, commandeering Yahweh's word. Well, we have plenty of other commandments that tag along with this. And so I reject those interpretations. The basic activity regulated in the ninth commandment is, quote, answering. And again, answering means response. That means responsibility. The related commands certainly broaden the scope of this topic. Question, must someone pose a precise question to you in order to get the truth out of you? As though day-to-day life is structured like a cheap TV courtroom drama? You've seen these things on TV. Try to shovel words into a person's mouth, or they ask the question just right, so a distortion of reality has to come out of their mouth. There are times and places where an answer is expected. Business transactions, relationships, giving and receiving, investigations, research, interviews, conversations, publishing. The conversations surrounding these activities includes a reasonable expectation of pertinent disclosure. Every one of these topics, one of these arenas of activity, has the potential of a lie getting in there. I mean, where do I begin? I mean, business transactions. Just look at the headlines. During the prior to the financial fall in late 2008, beginning in 2009, that most recent financial crash, one of the basic games that there's several little games they play. One was to sell investment vehicles to investors and take their commission. And the commission was often very juicy, very lucrative. A portion of the value is taken off. And the things they were told, you know, urged to invest in had almost no value. Relationships. Like, for example, if you're in a courtship, is there some substantive fact about you that your counterparty in the courtship should know before making covenant? I'm reminded of the I think they were the Gileadites who swindled Joshua and his buddy. Did I have that right? The Gileadites, they dressed up as beggars. Gibeonites. Oh, Jacob, okay. Jacob was on the winning team last night for the Bible quiz, and he's pitching in again. The Gibeonites, okay. Way to go, Jacob. And they dressed in rags, and they said, oh, we're poor. Could you help us? And all this. And you find out they're Gibeonites. They were among those that they had to be destroyed. And I'm not sure if they were marked to be destroyed, but they're definitely marked to be conquered. And they said, look, you know, you lied to us. We went into covenant with you, but from now on, you're going to be a hewer of wood and, you know, do chores for us. But at least they saved their lives, right? But I mean, what kind of lie are you telling? I mean, there's substantive things you can hold back from your counterparty in a courtship, and they find out later they're going to resent you. You're lying about your age? Other things? Sometimes I listen to that guy on the radio, Dave Ramsey. How many people have ever heard of Dave Ramsey? Yeah, I recommend. He's a financial advisor. Now, you guys know I spend a lot of time on the road. Now, I fish around for radio stations to keep me awake. But some guy called in. He said, I'm engaged to a girl, and she says she owes a lot of money, but she's not going to tell me how much it is until we get married. He said, he asked Dave Ramsey, what do I do? You know, of course, Dave Ramsey says, find out what that is all about. You don't tie the knot and then get anchored to this. That comes under the ninth commandment, you know. Here's the deal. So where's the lie in there? She's pretending it's not important. Well, if it's a small matter, why not get it out into the open? The lie is to pretend that it's not important. Sometimes these lies are so subtle. Interviews, conversations, publishing. One thing, you know, I've done some writing over the years. When you're in the business of publishing the truth, I know we have a lot of ministers who tune in. We know there's pastors secretly watching broadcasts and things like that. By the way, back east, a congregation from Church of God Internet, one of the worldwide spinoffs, just joined one of our sister congregations back east. They just dropped it and moved into our space. And you can ask me more later on, but this is good news from back east. If you came from the old Worldwide Church of God, you got a pretty good foundation. And they just, as a group, they just, bunches of them came in. But when you're publishing the truth, you're going to be tempted to persuade people to the right thing for the wrong reason. One of the proudest days of my life is many years ago at Tabernacles. Many years ago, we had Bible studies in the morning, early morning. And one morning, instead of a study, all the elders lined up in the front. And they said, there's an old theory out there we're not going to teach anymore. An old theory that Jesus comes from Zeus. And we're just not going to teach that anymore. It was one of the happiest days of my life. But there were people who were teaching the right thing for the wrong reason. We don't use the name Jesus because, well, it's wrong. It's a grand distortion of a very holy name. Every phoneme in the name Jesus is wrong. The J is wrong. The E is wrong. They say the S like a Z, like in zebra. The U is misplaced. They put an S at the end as though it's a Latin or Greek name. It's a high distortion of a very holy name. It doesn't convey any meaning. It violates the principle of transliteration that we find in the Bible, throughout the Bible. But we don't have to tell a lie to put the point across. You'll be tempted to exaggerate and all that kind of thing when you're trying to get the truth out there. Here are some cheap rhetorical tricks used to overrule Yah's law. How many have heard this one, let the buyer beware? Do you think that slogan that's floating around our culture is a basis for overthrowing Yah's word? Here's another one in the business world. He must perform due diligence before buying. You know, I bet you guys are tired of hearing all of my car accidents. Okay, here's the reason you hear these stories is because I'm honest enough to tell people, oop, I hit your car. Like you've heard, like maybe within the last week or two, you've heard me talk about that St. Thomas Christian from Malabar. I talk about that car accident. Actually, I hit his car in a parking lot. It's a little worse than that. I hit one car, and that hit his car. And the reason The reason these people know about these accidents is because I stuck around and waited for them. And I made peace with all of them, but I mean the Christian from Malabar, I remember he told me all these beautiful things about the original story of Thomas the Apostle going there and converting them. And when I used the name Yahweh in conversation, tears started coming to his eyes. He says, "You talk about ancient things nobody talks about anymore." Yeah. Well, another one of my accidents was in Kalamazoo. This time I backed up that dumb pickup of mine into a BMW. I have a hall of fame of all these little cars I've left notes on and everything. But I went back into the restaurant and asked around, I said, "Hey, who owns that BMW out there?" Now listen, I roughed up the guy's bumper, and then when I paid him for the damages, weeks later he told me, he kind of dropped his guard. We made friends. Isn't that what Yahweh wants? Make shalom, restitution. It only cost me $300 or so. What's the fear? What was I afraid of? Anyway, he dropped his guard and he said that he and a partner had bought a nationwide chain of car repair shops. And then after millions of dollars traded hands. And then after they bought the shops, they found that a large fraction of them were in terrible shape. And when they took them to court, it was costing a lot of money to take them to court. And he said to me, we wound up giving them several million dollars to fight us in court. That's really what it came down to. One might argue, well, you're supposed to do due diligence. Well, of course you are. That's on your side of the equation. What no man should defraud another and hide defective shops, defective merchandise, and the like. And I mean, how many times have we heard this? Well, if it was important, I mean, you didn't ask me about it. Or, I can't tell you everything. I can't cover everything. These are rhetorical statements we hear bouncing off the walls when there's tension. By the way, remember James said that all contention comes from lust. It's because you want something. All arguments come because somebody wants something. In some cases, we don't want to be found out. People who parrot this kind of foolishness, they're saying that business practice trumps Yahweh's law. I don't buy it. How about let the buyer beware? Or he must perform due diligence before buying. Yahweh says, "Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shall fear thy Elohim, I am Yahweh." When you sell defective merchandise, he's blind. Your customer is blind. He doesn't know. In fact, one of the things that's bothering me about this surveying business is that I'm competing against people who will cut corners, not fulfill their duty. Let's go to the next one. Well, you didn't ask me about that. I can't cover everything. Yahweh says in Leviticus 19:13, "Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor." This is a slide. I purposely left this in here. This is a slide from last commandment I covered. There are so many ways to steal that an honest researcher will be tempted to throw his hands up in hopelessness. I just modified it. There are so many ways to answer or fail to answer fraudulently. There are so many ways to answer fraudulently or fail to answer that an honest researcher will be tempted to throw his hands up in hopelessness. I've seriously thought of putting this off for a long time. So many ways to lie, defraud, cover up, give a partial answer. Why do we deceive? The more intelligent the creature is, the more able the creature is to anticipate outcomes. We deceive because we are afraid of that unhappy outcome if the facts come out. More specifically, ourself fears the punishments and losses. Some of you have heard this story already. On the left-hand side of the screen, you see Coco the gorilla. Coco the gorilla is that famous gorilla, very intelligent. She learned about 1,000 signs in sign language, and they were able to communicate with this critter. When a fellow gorilla died and they reported it, Coco made the sign for sad, bad, sad. Coco was expressing emotion with sign language. Now, I might have it mixed up. It might have been bad, sad, bad, or sad, bad, sad. But anyway, the gorilla expressed clearly that she was displeased to learn of her friend dying. But you know, gorillas are very strong. Now, she adopted a kitty cat, and she actually chose a kitty cat as a pet. And she took care of that cat like it was her own child. It's an amazing lot of... Coco is spelled with the letter K, K-O-K-O. You can do an internet search. Well, in one famous episode, she ripped the sink out of the wall. She was mad about something. These gorillas are strong. Ripped the sink right out of the wall. Now, they saw it on the camera. The trainer came in and said, "What happened, Coco?" And Coco claimed the kitty cat did it. It's a famous story. The gorilla thinks we're so dumb. Okay. We fear the same things Coco feared, and more. Loss of love, loss of security. I mean, maybe she'd get punished. Loss of respect, loss of standing, loss of relationship. Yeah, this is the business of fear. We'll find it's at the basis. Why the fear? It turns out fear is condemned in the scripture. I thought fear was just one of these optional human qualities that we have to get around to overcoming. I did not know it was condemned in the Bible. Revelation 21, 7 to 8. I may have the numbers wrong there. Oh, I don't know what happened here, but it's in Revelation 21, somewhere in the neighborhood of verse 7 or 18. It says, "He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his Elohim. But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." Now, I'd like you to think about something. You know, I'm glad I brought my Bible up because I want to make sure I get those numbers right. But while I'm thumbing to that passage, I'd like you to think about something. Yahweh's law has a whole heap of stuff that's forbidden. But Revelation 21 only mentions these things. Revelation 21 only mentions certain things. See, if I don't know how I missed this. You know, I plucked this off of... I'm going to ask somebody who's better at the Bible than me to tell me where this came from, because I don't know where. 7 through 8, Revelation 21, 7 through 8. Thank you so much. So it's not Revelation 21, 7 to 18. It's 7 through 8. I don't know how that happened. But I underlined the words, "that overcometh." If you look for the string, "that overcometh," in the book of Revelation, using your search tools, you'll find there are eight passages that say, "he that overcometh," or "to him that overcometh." There's eight promises to we who overcome. Yes, Yahshua wants disciples, but he also wants overcomers. That's important before you read the next bunch. You always got a whole bunch of stuff that's forbidden. But he puts these particular character qualities in this passage. And I highlight fearful and liars. Fearful and liars. Now, there's no question fear is at the underpinning of lying, being afraid of the outcome. Let's look at fear. It's from the Greek Strong's number 1169, delos. And sure enough, it means timid, fear, fearful, that kind of thing. Here's an important passage where it shows up. Now, I pasted in there the Esword. A passage with all the Strong's numbers. It's in Matthew 8:26, when Yahshua calms the storm. And he saith unto them, "Why are you fearful, O ye of little faith?" Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. Notice I highlight the words fearful and then little faith. That's the same word for fearful that you saw in Revelation, a character quality Yahweh's condemning. I mean, you're going in there with the second death if you're fearful. Well, this is a question I've asked myself many times. Can Yahweh protect me when I speak the truth in this storm? Can he? That's the issue at play. And I think you're going to keep getting this issue come up in your life until you develop the lack of fear. You develop the courage. I thought courage was important, but I didn't know how important it was until I studied this issue of lying. My friend and brother, Lucas Cecil, Lucas. You know, I keep getting your first and last name mixed up. Thanks so much for that water. This is the question of the hour. Can Yahweh protect me when I speak the truth in this storm? Let's go back to Revelation. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his Elohim. Same passage, Revelation 21, 7 to 8. But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now I highlight the third word. These all work together. Lying, unbelieving, fearful. Bing, 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 bing. They all work together. If you get a grip on that, you'll get a grip on your fears. You get a grip on telling the truth even when it hurts. Here's some common temptations to lie. Amplifying accomplishments to make the self look good. Bloviating in conversation just to have something to say. I was at a workplace I better not say where it was. I was at a workplace once, and I noticed people would say things in meetings that I knew were verifiably false. And not only that, I was the only guy in the room who knew they were false. And I wondered, where did they come up with that? How did they arrive at that? I got data that says something very different. And after I'd been there for a while, one of the engineers took me aside. He said, they got a problem here. The managers, if some of them got a problem, they just say things in meetings just to make it look like they know what they're talking about. Oh, gosh. I never thought I'd see that. I never thought I'd have. I think I had two people tell me that independently. Why would somebody just bloviate in a meeting to fill it up with nonsense and they can't even prove it? And there was a lot at stake. Why did that bother me? Distorting data. Now you guys know I have some bracelets with Yahweh's laws on them. I take commandments from Deuteronomy, and I make bracelets out of them. The one I'm wearing here says, remember the Sabbath day. It's just four words. They're all commands from Deuteronomy. I have a bracelet somewhere. I haven't unpacked everything. But it's taken from Deuteronomy 25:15. But thou shalt have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which Yahweh the Elohim giveth thee. Well, that's important to an engineer because engineers are constantly tempted to fudge the data. Don't we have some engineers here? I see Randy smiling. Now, I know you've gone into software, but when you're doing electrical engineering, I mean, maybe in school there was a temptation to fudge the data. They call it dry labbing, where you don't even take the data. You just put numbers down in a notebook and get a grade on it. I don't think I did that, but I've heard of guys doing it. Brother Steve is here, not here right now, but he's a nuclear engineer. You better not fudge the data when it's a nuclear power plant. that's not the time to fudge the data. Yet we see this. In fact, the scientific community is in a state of turmoil right now because there's a rash of scientific articles being published with very thin data, very little data, and the trends they're trying to establish don't establish what they claim. This is a particular problem in the pharmaceutical industry. Someone very close to me was a marketer, a sales agent for a major drug company, And one of the studies came out and showed that the drug was not effective. And, you know, they had like a nationwide teleconference call to figure out, what do we tell the doctors now? How do we cover this? Let me go off on a bunny trail again, another sideshow. You know, we had a situation several years ago where two sisters in the covenant had to go and testify in deposition. And one called the other and said, hey, we're going to testify tomorrow. We better get together and make sure our stories match. And the other one said, I'm just going to tell the truth. There ain't no need to synchronize what we say. Well, it turned out the girl who said that, I happened to be going out with her at the time. And it was one of many reasons to admire her. She has a reputation for being very brave. You shall have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have. In your words, your reports, your data. Here's one. I mean, I could go on all day long. Here's another one. I pick up a rental car. The gas needle is on E. No, it's on F. Forgive me, it's on F. But you know very well that when the needle's on F, there's still a couple more gallons you can put in there. Sure enough, if I go to the gas station down the road, put in the gas hook nozzle, and it absorbs 2 gallons or so, I'm expected to top it off when I return it on F. But the guy before me didn't do that. He made it look like it was full. When I rented that truck, we coordinated a move to for one of the saints here to Missouri. I picked up the truck. They claimed it was full of gas. I looked at it. I said, it's like 7/8. It's not even on the F. And the lady says, oh, that's full. That's about as far as it's going to go. I said, come on. Now, if I go down the road, is it going to go to F? She says, that's about as far as it's going to go. That's full. She's fudging. She's just fudging, smearing reality. And she wound up changing it back to 7/8. She put an initial on it, and that's all I was responsible for. But everywhere you go, you see, now that represents, like, depending on the price of gas, $6 to $10 a profit. Is this what it takes to survive today? Temptations to lie. Conversation where scoring points is more important than accuracy. Here's one for you. Having 21 items in a 20-item express line at the grocery store. Had a friend at work. He was really upset. By the way, his name was Mike, too. This was several years ago at AT&T. And he says, you know, he was from one of these African countries. We really hit it off good. He says, you know, I got in an argument yesterday at the grocery store, and the man was angry at me because I had 22 items in the basket, only 2 items more than the 20 that was required. He said, this guy got real mad at me, and I started arguing with him. I just don't know what to do about it. I said, Mike, if you have more than 20 items, go in the other line. He said, oh, I never thought of that. He said, you know, Mike, I think you're right. Yes, I could have just gone in the other line. When I was young, I tried this. I had more than 20, whatever the limit is. They're all different, 12, 18, you know. But I tried this. I said, well, we'll count those 3 bottles of juice as 1 item, you know. I played these games. Now, to avoid offense, if there's more than 20 items, I go into the other line. You know, why? What am I afraid of? How about reserving news of critical flaws until it is too late to turn back? You know, there's some relationships in which there's got to be full disclosure. Some things are painful. Some things are very painful. Sometimes there's congenital diseases that run in the family. People ought to know about that before they get married. If you have fallen short in this area, you ought to come clean sometime today. This is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This topic speaks directly to leavening, doesn't it? This was actually from this slide here is from the previous presentation on stealing. And I made mention of the fact last time that deception and stealing, lying and stealing often go together. You can steal without lying and you can lie without stealing, but there's broad areas where they overlap. And Strong's Dictionary says the Hebrew word for steal implies a deception. The Jesenius Lexicon does as well. Deception is already covered in the Torah once you consider the spirit of the following mitzvah. Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shall fear thy Elohim, I am Yahweh. If I sell a CD on eBay or Amazon, they can't hear the defects in it. They're deaf to that defect, aren't they? Deception is fully covered in this command because deception relies on suppression of important facts to which the victim is blind, or else relies on wording which the hearer cannot fully understand based on context and reasonable assumptions. Defective merchandise, agreements which have long-term consequences which could not be known to the victim until it is too late. Here's some deception vignettes. Ahab, Jezebel in the vineyard. How many people know about Ahab, Jezebel in the vineyard? Ahab, Jezebel in the vineyard. I only saw one hand go up. Two, three, maybe more. Oh, there's one over there. Okay, young Jacob again, his hand go up. Ahab saw a vineyard that he liked. He lusted after. And he was miserable because the guy wouldn't sell it to him. He said, I can't sell you this. This is my inheritance. It's against Yahweh's law. I'm paraphrasing now, but he said, this is against Yahweh's law. I can't sell you the inheritance of my ancestors. So he went home with a foot-long sourpuss, and Jezebel says, why are you sad? And he told her. So she hired a couple of guys to lie in a trial and say that I forget the guy's name, but this particular owner of the vineyard had cursed Yahweh. And on that basis, they killed him, capital punishment. Ahab got the vineyard, and he was happy. This is an example of Jezebel's evil. While I was out in California, I learned of a lady who lied for her son to gain candidacy at a better school. She had fear of the environment her child would experience in the school that was designated for him. So she lied about the kid's age, or else she lied about a test score. She lied about something, but she was afraid of her child being at another school. I said, you know, another kid has lost his spot in that school because your son was there. She says, I know. She agreed. You know? Can Yahweh protect me in the truth in this raging storm? Continuing lies about weight, we lie about our age. My mom told me something. My mom was very wise. She told me something. I don't know how true it is, but I don't think she'd lie. But she did tell me that there are courts that will not ding you for perjury if you're a woman and you lie about your age. No. She's trying to impress upon me. She's trying to impress upon me. I'm sure it's true somewhere, but she's trying to impress upon me how sacred a woman's age is. You know, so I never guess a woman's age. I don't talk about it, you know, none of that. But why does this go on? You know, we were house hunting yesterday, and there was a lady we met who claimed she was 68. And I said, thou shalt not lie. I said, you don't look 68. And I was telling the truth. I don't know if she appreciated it, but we make excuses for lateness. We got in a traffic jam. I got in a traffic jam on the way. But of course, I'm not going to mention I left an hour late, but there was a traffic jam, was there? Make excuses for poor performance. We have pride. We're afraid of what people think. Then there's chronic liars. I mean, there's some people out there. They lie. They lie even when they don't have to lie. They just keep going on and on. Then there are these chronic liars, they think they can create a world of their own reality by what they say. There's verses about this now. Isn't there a verse in there about we have inherited lies? Isn't this an essential part of the restoration ministry is to overthrow this foolishness. Like, how do you overthrow this stuff? It's so embedded in the culture. Sometimes I look across the land and I wonder, how will this nation be saved? The framework in the false assumptions. Well, anyway, let's talk about avoiding deception. Some ways of detecting temptation to lie. You might hear in the course of temptation words like, psst, this is a secret. Or, hey, let's not tell our parents. This agreement is confidential. You know, this happened to me, actually. This agreement is confidential. Looking back, if I knew then what I know now, I would have said no. But when I was offered a full-time position at a company near Chicago, I lobbied for 3 weeks vacation. And I said, come on, you're trying to give me just 2 weeks of vacation. I said, you're benefiting from experience and training you never paid for. I said, all the other guys would demand a month. All I want is 3 weeks. He says, all right. He says, but we'll have to keep this agreement confidential. You know, here's the mistake in that. It wasn't a lie, but there was a written agreement with the 3 weeks in there, but he wanted the written agreement to be confidential. The problem was if he ever quit, I'd have to pull that agreement out of my archives and show it to the next manager. And let me just say that when people require you to keep something in confidence, there's a risk there. And you should really strive to keep those promises to a minimum. While I'm at it, don't come to me with a secret and blurt it out, let the cat out of the bag, and then say, oh, yeah, by the way, this is a secret. I can't unhear that stuff, okay? And I can't be making a promise. I tell people, don't give me secrets. I'm a big mouth. Don't tell me anything secret. Here's what I handle this by saying, I will not pass this information on to someone who's not part of the problem or part of the solution. That's a very reasonable basis. If they can't trust me, then I say, don't tell me. If you can't trust my judgment, don't tell me. I'd rather not hear it. I'm doing fine without knowing this, you know? Here's another one in the business world. If we lie a little bit in this area, the deal will go through. I know a man who once signed a receipt stating he got paid for a job, and he gave it to, he was a subcontractor to a contractor, and that guy used that receipt to get money from a bank. And the original contractor got his money, but he looked at the guy, he says, you know, what I just did was illegal. He says, yeah, I know, what you did was illegal. But he signed a receipt that wasn't true. He managed to get away with it. But this is what goes on in the business world, these little bitty lies. Let's think a moment on the scriptures. John 3:19-21. And this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world. And men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in Yahweh. Here's a classic book on evil. I urge you, if you're a book reader, to get your hands on this, but you should be praying while you read this. How many people here have read this book? Loretta? You people? Some of us go back many years. We have friends going back many years. How many might remember Larry Ernst? Do you remember Larry Ernst? Yeah, he recommended this to me. And it's one of those things, every time you read it, you get more out of it. It's hair-raising. I get choked up thinking about it. Okay, it's an MD who became a clinical psychologist or a psychiatrist. I get the words mixed up. But he had cases come to him. He couldn't figure these people out for nothing. He was very puzzled. They would not fall into any categories that he was trained to handle. And even with all his experience, he couldn't understand these people. And I get choked up thinking about some of these cases, because not only were these people seriously in trouble, but they hurt a lot of people along the way. And he starts off with simple stories, goes on to more intense cases. M. Scott Peck, The People of the Lie, People of the Lie. the hope for healing human evil. He says you got people who are already evil and people who are sliding into it. You want to rescue them. I'm going to give you my three-point review because I've read it a number of times. From this book, I had learned that evil is indicated by three features. I call it the three C's: confusion, control, and cover-up. Cover-up is the topic of today. When you meet someone who manifests confusion, control, and cover-up, they're evil. Okay, I'm just telling you, I'm warning you. You better run the other way, put up some defenses. Confusion, control, and cover-up. Okay, I've told this story on occasion. I'm telling you this not to draw attention to myself, but to have you learn, because I know what it is to be on the edge. I'll give you the short version of the story. I committed some vandalism in my youth. There was an eyewitness. When I was brought before the teacher's desk, I denied it, even with the eyewitness there. And I denied it. The teacher was baffled. On the way home, I kept saying to myself, I didn't do it. Because I'd been saying it for, you know, a good 15 minutes in front of the teacher's desk. And when you're in that zone, you realize there's no way they can't know what really happened. There's no way they can know what really happened. The only two people in the world who knew what happened was me and the eyewitness. I was a half a block from my home. I was only in sixth grade at the time. Half a block from my home, I was just a lad, maybe 12 years old. I thought, wait a minute, did I do it or didn't I? I came that close as a child, crossing the line of deceiving myself. That's the basis of this book. People that are so entrenched in lies, they can't tell truth from error. This is a scary topic. Maybe this is one of the reasons why I'm having such a hard time pulling all this together. One thing he noticed is that these people are dreadfully afraid of being exposed. He was asked in an interview, you can find it on YouTube, why did you call it People of the Lie? He says, well, because so many of them are in the churches. So many of these people hide behind religion. This is why I deeply resent it when I find a minister out there who might claim fellowship with us. Some, you've heard of these characters. I ain't going to do it here. They bring shame to Yah's work. But confusion, control, cover-up, and I didn't mention it here, but fear always is at the underpinning. Let's analyze your motives. What's your intent? This stuff could go both ways. When you speak an answer to somebody or report facts, what is your intent? Sometimes you think someone's deceiving you when they're not. You have to ask yourself when you're reporting or responding, what do you fear? What is your intent? You know, if you love the counterparty in a conversation, you'll want them to be informed, not uninformed. Some perceived lies are driven by misunderstandings. There are times when I thought people had lied to me and deceived me. When I go back and I get the facts, I go, oh, no. There was a misunderstanding. Maybe it was B before A, or I assume something was at play that was not. Be sure to determine whether someone is really lying to you. It is often a misunderstanding. Adding or dropping details in an accounting can be easily clarified with direct conversation. But, I should have put the word but there, frequent need for clarification and, quote, explanations suggest a closer look. If you have someone in your space who's always got an angle, they always got an explanation, they always have an excuse, this is going on for a long time, there comes a point where you raise a flag and you say, hey, there's something deeper going on here. Deception is rooted in desire. It is tempting to jump ahead to the 10th commandment. The 9th commandment governs what you communicate or fail to communicate. The 10th commandment governs the heart. Get the heart right and all else falls into place. What is it that you desire? Get those desires right and all that stuff falls into place. Strategies to avoid deception. Now, this works both ways. First, something that means a lot to me, never put someone in a position where lying is attractive. For example, I will never, if I fall short in this, let me know. I would never demand a yes or no answer to a question. Sometimes there's an explanation called for. There really is. And I'm not going to pretend that this is some, life is some cheap TV courtroom drama. Is it yes or no? Yes or no? Because sometimes there's an angle to that thing that requires clarification. For example, suppose a crime was committed in my living room. And on a witness stand, I'm asked, were you in that room? A harsh lawyer, were you in that room, yes or no? Well, the answer is yes, but I happen to be fast asleep, or I happen to be knocked out cold. But that lawyer might try to frame it like I'm responsible because it was in my living room. Intentionality and context will drive the response. If you're having harsh questions shoveled your way in a courtroom, you might appeal to the judge to allow you to speak, quote, the whole truth as you testify under penalty of perjury. If I was asked a question that was nuanced, I would turn to the judge, and I don't know if this will work, but I'd turn to the judge and I'd say, Your Honor, I agreed to tell the whole truth. If I'm limited to a yes or no answer, it'll leave out part of the truth. May I answer truthfully? And if the judge insists that I still answer yes or no, at least the jury heard me say that. You know? And even if they strike it from the record, the jury heard that. And they'll see that this harsh lawyer is trying to crowbar me into some interpretation that's, in fact, very false. Strategies to avoid deception. We're thundering to the finish line here. Stop all improper desire. All of it. All of it. Even if you're in a hurry, you know. I know I got 22 items, but, and I know the sign says 20 or less, you know, but there's a little baby desire to zip through, coloring outside the lines. Here's another one. Something bad happened to me when I was young, so I'm excused from proper behavior now. You know, this is an old game. And after a while, people got to grow up. The Spirit of the Sovereign Yahweh is upon me, Isaiah 61:1. Because Yahweh hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. The binding of the brokenhearted, that's what I point people to when they try to give me this business that, well, something bad happened to me, I'm allowed to be immature now. Yahweh wants a healed people, he wants a brave people, he wants an honest people. And you abide in Yahshua's teachings, you get that healing. More strategy to avoid deception. Stop all improper desire. Oh. Improper desire seeks a justification within the heart of the sinner. Like I told you earlier, the due diligence thing. This is actually repetitive. Let me skip to the bottom. Let's see, bottom half, Matthew 7:12 on the slide here. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Notice it's proactive. It's proactive. Where there you'll find similar remarks and other philosophies. Don't do to your neighbor what you wouldn't want him to do to you. Yahshua is proactive. Do, you know, go do. It may be very painful to be forthcoming, but the alternative is unacceptable. Matthew 16:26, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? How many have seen that movie, A Man for All Seasons? I urge you to see it. King of England wanted to dump his wife and get another one, and one guy stood up and said, it's Sir Thomas More. He says, no, you're not supposed to do this. And it was a lie that got his head chopped off. And he quoted this passage. His words were distorted. More strategies for overcoming fear. Do not be afraid to ask, what is wrong with this picture? Can I ask you, friends, please, use pain, use consonant, what is it? Use cognizant dissonance. In other words, when you know something's wrong inside, something's not right, something doesn't fit. Areas affected in your life would be financial management, poverty. Poverty might be an indication that you're doing something wrong. I'm not saying it's a punishment. But if you're always in trouble, there's an indication something could be wrong. How about if your conscience is troubled? Areas of moral impurity. You know, we try to be discreet up here, but there's some aspects of moral impurity. It's just obvious this is wrong. It's just obvious. So if someone demands excessive privacy, how about if you're dealing with emotional and physical pain? You ought to go get help. And you're publishing the truth. I talked about this earlier. If you're publishing the truth, be careful how you frame it. If you have to make it so every paragraph is correct. I wonder if I could get, I'm going to dwell on this. I'm going to ask, can I have a wireless mic and get the keyboard activated? Okay, I know this is going to be hard. I know those cameras can swivel around. I thought there was a wireless mic up here. Maybe I can use Randy's, I don't know. I'll tell you the background story. I did a science fair experiment with my kid sister's daughter. And the idea was consonance and dissonance. Oh, this microphone pickup is good? Okay. And I said, Peggy, let's go to people we know with electronic keyboard and strike two notes on a keyboard and see which ones go together. I'm going to go to the keyboard and mimic some of this for you. Thanks a lot, Randy. Okay. Oh, I think it'll work. Okay. Okay, thanks so much. I'm going to an electronic keyboard now. Just make sure there's enough volume. And we would strike two keys and ask people what sounds better. This... It's too low. Let's try this. This or this? We do dyads, two notes at a time. And we'd ask people, which sounds better? We had several pairs like that selected. Some of them were a close call. Which sounds better, this or this? We mixed it up. But you know from musical theory that any two adjacent keys are dissonant. In fact, this... Ellie, I don't think I've ever heard you make a mistake, but if you ever do this, we'll note it. Those are two keys side by side. They always sound dissonant. And after a while, we had a nice statistical profile. We had nice graphs of what combinations were more pleasing than others. Most everybody picked the two keys side by side as dissonant, like, ooh, I don't like that. We went to a home... Then it was like a friend of hers from school, and it was like visiting the Addams family. The house was chaos, total chaos. As soon as the door opened, you could just feel it. TV's blaring, a baby's running around screaming with a diaper on. The table's covered with dirty dishes, and it was just a mess. And a lady was screaming upstairs, "No, no, no! What's going on here?" And the girl who's going to do the experiment with us took us to her room upstairs. As we walked by, the lady who was screaming opened the door. She's fully clothed. But the lady who was screaming looked at us like we were nuts. Now, the reason I'm telling you all this, we went into her room and closed the door. We did the experiment hitting the keys that we preordained. I'm not kidding you. That girl thought the dissonant combinations, the ones that sound ugly... She said, this was pretty. This stuff. She said that was pretty. And pleasant combination, she said, no, I don't like that. I never expected that outcome. But you think about it. This home was it really was chaos. You could feel the confusion in the air. I couldn't get out of there fast enough. Weeks afterwards, I found out even more about that family. I don't even want to get into it. That house was like the Addams family. It was just something way out,
way out. But they thought dissonance was normal. You have to ask yourself. I think I'm going to go now to my local mics. Can I have my pulpit mics now?
Thanks, Randy. If you're used to blocking these signals that you're always putting in your conscience, if you're used to blocking that out, it comes to a point where nobody can get through to you. And you got to be able to say, something's wrong here. Something's not right. Now, you may be in a situation where you need to engage another human being to make things right. If they are unwilling to talk, my heart goes out to you. Because few things are more painful than having somebody in your space who's too afraid to face the truth. My heart goes out to you. Excuse me. And you know, sometimes that kind of thing happens amongst our families and friends and loved ones when it comes to the holy days and other aspects of the truth. To set your house in order, you're going to have to slam on the brake and say, what's wrong here? And it's going to take a while. Sometimes it takes years to sort things out. So, do you think you are forced to lie? Here's another area of strategies to overcome fear. Are you in a situation where you're forced to lie? I just got to lie. I'm forced to. Then don't put yourself in a position where lying is required. Change jobs. Change the context. Move out. Transition to other projects. And read Psalm 107. Yahweh is very willing to deliver us from danger and evil. Yeah, it might cost you something to do the right thing. I was at the mechanic shop, my favorite mechanic up in Fulton. And some well-to-do guy brought in a really fancy SUV, and they told him that big joint at the back has completely broken. It's going to cost high hundreds of dollars to fix it. And this rich guy, he says, well, can't you just jerry-rig it with wires or something until I can sell it? And the mechanic said, I can't do that. I want to sleep at night. By the way, that mechanic has been caught several times by me being very honest. And that's wonderful to know that I have a confidence in him because he's been honest. Things that I thought were major prepared. He says, nope, just something was loose, that's all. And he could have really blown it up. But if you're in a position where you're being forced to do lies and things like that, get out. You know, pray for a strategy. Here's one where we're forced to lie. Again, along the lines of strategies. You may not like what I'm going to recommend. This is a Wi-Fi access page from Pizza Hut near the place where I'm lodging. I think this is Pizza Hut in Paramount, California. At the bottom, I checked the box that said, I have read, I understand, and I accept terms and conditions. Let's go with the one at the end. If it merely says, I accept the terms and conditions, that's not a lie. I'm accepting it even if I haven't read it. Let's see all those hands. How many of you have completely read these things? Let's see all those hands. Huh? Look at that. Nobody's raised their hands. There was a time when this business started decades ago. I would actually read these things because I wanted to, in good conscience, check the box. Because they augmented it. Instead of saying, I accept these terms and conditions, it says, I have read these terms and conditions. And so I'd read them all just so I could say yes to both of those claims. I read it and I accept it. Now they say, I have read, I understand, and I accept these terms and conditions. Now usually, you don't see it here, but usually I scroll down to give the impression I read it. Just in case they're watching. And then I check the box. Now, where's the lie in here? You could say I've lied by checking that box. And I believe I have. This really bothers me. Remember, he who's faithful in a little thing will be faithful in a big thing. But there's another aspect to the lie here. The people who architected this agreement is a team of Philadelphia lawyers who've been to school and got big degrees in this. And I'm just a little guy eating in a pizza shop. So you got this team of lawyers making an agreement, a binding legal agreement, and I'm bound to them as though I'm an equal. The lie implicit here is that it's peer-to-peer. And it's not an agreement by and between. You know, it's just them. I'm no longer going to check this box at Wi-Fi's, that's for sure. I don't need it. And I'm going to start checking less and less of these boxes. I hope someday I check none of them. But I'm trying to think ahead, trying to get into the habit of saying no to convenience, even if it causes a little lie. This bothers me a lot because it gets us trained to think, oh yeah, we just click yes and keep on going. I told you guys I have a hard time keeping track of all my promises, you know? Okay, here's another book I recommend for overcoming fear. Okay, in the context of strategies to overcome fear, understand that most fears are unfounded. The truth hurts when it should. Embrace duty. It's a whole new sermon. People who fled from duty because they're afraid. Well, it turns out worry is the twin sister of fear. And I want to recommend a book to you by Dale Carnegie. It's a classic, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And you know what's funny is, I took the Dale Carnegie course, and then there's a little booklet that summarizes all the modules. And in the part about worry, the summary of the whole book says the best way to overcome worry, prayer. Prayer. If you're worried about something, fervent prayer is the perfect antidote. This always works. It always works. It might take two or three sessions, but it's not typically that long for me, but it might take two or three sessions. But if something's bothering you inside, like I talked about earlier, learn to spot that and say, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. Just like those two notes that sound ugly when they're played together. Something is dissonant inside. My fear is that the whole nation is used to this. My fear is that the whole nation has been trained to accept lies, distortions, darkness. I think all this is normal. I urge you to get this book if you're dealing with fears and worries. I did not expect to find such a wonderful treasure of wisdom, and has a nice Christian slant to it. Okay, concluding remarks. Brother Javon, I'm almost done. You've all been very patient with me. The ninth commandment of 10, concluding remarks. Lying is everywhere because fear is everywhere. The book of Revelation condemns liars and the fearful. And I should add the unbelieving. They go together. Unbelief, fear, and lying. Abiding in Yahshua's teachings develops a systematic theology for catching even little sins of lying and maintaining your sanity. And one more thing. Sometimes doing the right thing is costly, but in the long run, it is a bargain, as is all righteousness. Thanks so much. It's going to take me a while to recover from all this. I appreciate your friendship. Brother Javon, hallelujah.